Hello everyone and welcome to this Nintendo Live. My name is NBZ and we're here at episode 83. It's a new year, it's 2017, it's the year of the Switch. And I'm joined by Bally, who is fucking stoked.
Hi NBZ, I think we were confident that 2016 was going to be the year of the Switch.
Well, it was the year of NX, clearly.
The year of
waiting for NX, and waiting,
it
and waiting.
Didn't really happen.
And waiting, and we waited, and eventually we found out what the NX was. And there we go. That's what it was. It was, yeah, 2016 for Nintendo is probably one of the weakest years in living memory.
Yeah.
There's definitely things like the 3DS actually had a surprisingly good year, considering that 2015 was kind of barren for that system. They kind of bounced back, and it was very much, you know, the Pokemon Go thing happened that really re-injected some sales into that system to the point where people can't actually buy them in North America. I'm hearing a lot of people saying that shortages on 3DS are happening as a result of Sun and Moon. So it wasn't a bad year. Like, they had the mobile games launching and they found some success.
It's just Nintendo had not promised but had hinted at a lot of things happening, and only a fraction of those things happened. But
it's very true.
Happy new year. It's a huge year for the show.
Absolutely. And we're gonna have fun because things are gonna be kicking off real hard with the next couple of days, because the Switch event is right around the corner, Bally, and we'll talk about what we're covering and how we're going to do that at the end of the show. But keep your eyes peeled on your podcast feeds, because we're going to do our best to get some of our thoughts about the Nintendo Switch out as soon as humanly possible. So we'll do that later in the show, but for now we're going to kick things off with whatever we're doing. But Bally, tell people what the rest of the show entails.
First of all, we're going to be talking quickly about what we've been playing, and then only two segments this show, but the second segment is going to be an extended segment, and it's, you know, first episode of the year. It's got to be 2017 predictions, so we'll briefly go over how right and wrong we were with our 2016 predictions, and then we'll get into some new ones for 2017, and there might even be a listener email included in that as well.
Yes, indeed. Excited to see how we do on those predictions, Bally. I have a feeling we probably didn't do too well. But
who knows?
Find out. Okay, well, let's kick things off, Bally, with the video games, what we have been playing. You came round to my house.
I did.
We recorded a lot of stuff.
A lot.
You also played a video game.
I did. So the last little while, I've mentioned a couple of times, I've been in a bit of a gaming funk. Like, I've sort of got Pokemon Sun on the go and Fire Emblem Fates Conquest, both very long games, very difficult to sort of... I find mentally these games quite difficult to get into. But once I'm into them, I kind of get hooked and I play them for really crazy amounts of time.
Is it the sort of thing where you know it's going to take a lot of hours, so you don't want to dedicate even like jumping in for 30 minutes or jumping in for a short period of time?
Yeah, I'm not good at playing those games for 30 minutes. I sort of always end up going for sort of 2.5 hours, 2 hours, and then sort of...
Got to build out a chunk of time for you to dedicate.
I went to crazy levels with Earthbound, but I just sort of wanted to play a shorter game just to get a game under my belt and play something a bit shorter that I really enjoyed and get into. And I've sort of delved into a little bit into Retro City Rampage on the 3DS, which I will talk about another time. But I was at your house, and there's a number of games that you always suggest to me, NBZ, be like, Bally, I've played this amazing game, you really got to check it out. And there's sort of a few that you've been saying this about for a very long time.
Yes.
And one of those games was, of course, Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Indeed.
Which I played, and you sat and watched very patiently.
It's one of those things with puzzle games. Sometimes, I think there are a lot of people on YouTube, especially in the comment section, who watch people let's play games and get frustrated and like, what the fuck, what are you doing, you goddamn arsehole? And I'm one of those people who I'm okay with kind of watching someone fumble around. And because as someone who does that, you know, who has let's played, who understands the plight that people go through when they're trying to record and talk at the same time and all that stuff, I have sympathy. And I also just, I'm not too worried if people are like doing things wrong. You know, because there are a lot of people who come from the mindset of like, oh, you have to play on the hardest difficulty and you have to do this specific way. And I have never been that way. I've never thought in that mindset. And so I find it relatively easy, although in my own mind, I'm like, oh, God, what's he doing? He can't figure this out, to sit there with you and just watch you play and kind of enjoy you discovering. Because I think the joy of a lot of brothers is thinking about the puzzle, getting your head around it, and then it clicking and you being, oh shit, I got it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was sort of being over the top in terms of, I was sort of outlining my thought process to you, and it was sort of like a way to maybe make you feel less frustrated, or maybe it would help you know when I was way away from actually solving something versus actually being quite close. But
right,
I mean, so we played on PS4. This was originally on PS3 way back in 2013. And we were playing like a sort of remastered version, right? It's sort of like
it's high resolution. I think the original game was actually a 360 release because it was part of their Live Arcade Summer of Arcade promotion that they used to do back in the day. So it came to 360, and then it came to PC and PS3 later. And so I think for the new consoles, they just basically put out a version with higher resolution. Unfortunately, the frame rate wasn't upped, so it stayed at 30. But you know, this kind of game, it's not a huge deal.
It's very
slow
paced.
Absolutely.
Not too big of a deal. But,
so I played it on PC back then, which was a great experience. But I think the PS4 version is good. It's a solid one if you want to play it. So before we kind of talk about it, Bally, how about you set it up, what the game actually is? Because I'm sure some people haven't heard of it before, because it's kind of a niche indie game to some degree.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm gonna spend like the first half talking without spoilers, and then we're going to put up a big, big warning and say spoilers, and then we're going to have another conversation. So I'll also
I will put timestamps in the description to let you know when the spoilers happen, so you can skip over those if you want to play the game,
but you're safe for now. So absolutely. Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons. You play as a younger brother and an older brother, and the unique selling point of this game is that the younger brother is controlled using the right analog stick and the older brother is controlled using the left analog stick. They also have their respective shoulder buttons, so your right hand operates the younger brother, that shoulder button operates the younger brother with your index finger, and likewise the older brother is your left index finger. So they each have an action button and you move them using the analog sticks. It's set in like a very sort of what initially seems like a historically accurate sort of Scandinavian style historical setting. And then gradually throughout the game becomes a lot fairly fantasy based, and almost like a classical fable situation.
Yeah, there are a lot of elements as you go through that you kind of recognize from myth and from fantasy.
Exactly.
Of, you know, your...
And it's incredibly narrative driven, but the great thing is that there's no words and the characters speak gobbledygook to each other, so...
Nain, Naya.
You can tell, so it's clear when they're interacting and when they're angry or sad or something, but you're not really, there's not like a language that you're understanding here. And I really like that about it, because you're taking in something that's not just made obvious through words, perhaps. It's a lot of subtle references here and there. And there's really cool stuff that this game does, where at the start of the game it feels really awkward to move these two characters, but then very quickly it becomes really natural, and it's just a really great mechanic to start off the game. And like, the whole game is only about 3 hours long, so it's just a sort of really compact, perfect package. I'm getting really scared I'm going to go into spoilers, so I'm being quite careful.
But the thing is, like, when you start the game, it's very much the situation where the two brothers are controlled by individual sticks, and so you don't really have camera control. Camera control is kind of bound to R1 and L1, which to some degree helps, and some degree you don't really need to do, because I think the game generally does an okay job of pointing the camera in the direction it needs to go in. But it is this gradual progression of, you started out and you were kind of controlling one at a time to do different tasks, but by the end of the game, you're like both clambering simultaneously. And I think the game feels at its best when you're doing that, when you're like pressing the triggers at the same time and you see the brothers doing the same actions on the screen simultaneously.
And the environments are just so well designed. Like, the whole game is incredibly linear, but you're traipsing through like rivers and towns and mountains and dungeons and underground and overground and ice situation and rivers, and you're flying at times, and it's just crazy amounts of things that happen that you would associate even more so with perhaps like an open world game. But this is the complete opposite. It's incredibly linear, but
it has the job of creating an illusion that there is more than there actually is.
It's a great illusion. Yeah, it's a fantastic illusion visually, and the game just looks so stunning. There are so many valleys and mountains and incredible scenic effects that they emphasize by benches that are spread throughout the game, where you can sit, both the brothers can sit down next to each other, and then the camera will automatically pan out and sort of view from behind their heads, looking out from the bench. And
yeah,
there's some really cool views when you do that. And so it's quite a fun thing.
It also kind of serves a foreshadowing purpose, right? Because you will constantly see areas ahead of you that you know you're going to get there eventually. But it's kind of the Earthbound effect to some degree, like with, we talked about how the spaceship goes around and you see the places you're going to have to go past. But here it's much more visually direct, because it's not a top-down view, of course, and you can kind of see where you're going to be going. So I like that about it. It definitely creates that idea of a journey, and that this world isn't broken up into pieces and loading screens. It feels like a complete whole.
And like the brothers aren't equals. Like, they have advantage. Each of them has advantages and disadvantages. So the younger brother is a lot weaker than the older brother and can't swim, but at the same time he's much better interacting with animals. And then like these little things where you can interact with dogs early in the game become more important later in the game as you start meeting different types of animals, and you know, like, oh, I remember the younger brother is better with animals. I better speak using the younger brother. And likewise, the older brother's stronger. There's certain levers and things and puzzles throughout the game that you can only use the older brother. And it's just great stuff like that that just really give you an understanding through mechanics, the relationship between the brothers, which is something that only video games can do, essentially.
Absolutely.
I think I'm going to stop now on that note and put up the spoiler warning.
Okay, so from this point onwards, we're going to be talking full spoilers about the rest of the game. So look in the description if you don't want to hear any of this, and you can skip right ahead.
Okay, spoilers. So, I unfortunately knew the ending before going into this game, but it didn't actually harm much of the experience for me, because knowing the ending and actually experiencing the ending, I believe, are two very distinctly different things with this game. So I just mentioned before that you understand the relationship between the two brothers through the way that they interact, and that's something only video games can do. So when the older brother dies at the end of the game, which I knew was going to happen, there's like an extra 20 minutes, half an hour of the game where you're playing as the younger brother, and I was sort of like, I just said, like, MBZ, it feels weird that I'm using only the younger brother. And then that's when you come in and you're like, that's the thing about Brothers Bally, is that it's the sense of loss. And it's like this phantom. It's like they talk about if someone loses a limb, they still feel like a phantom limb. So you've spent the whole game using two analog sticks to control each brother. And then all of a sudden the older brother dies and you're all of a sudden just using the right analog stick. And when you even step back and think about right analog sticks in video games, they're generally used for cameras. They're not even used normally to control the characters.
They're secondary, right? Just like the younger brother is the secondary
person
in this game.
So it feels very strange. And it's like you mentioned that the comparison with Earthbound, where there's that fourth wall breaking thing at the end of the game. And now I'm getting into Earthbound spoilers, so maybe that's not
well,
suitable.
The thing that I was talking about with Earthbound is you're having to pray in the last final battle. Because that is a combination of storytelling and mechanics kind of interweaving with one another, whereby you have this command that physically does something mechanically within the game, the prayer command, which sometimes helps you, sometimes hinders you. And at that point in time, it's the only thing you can do to kind of get yourself out of the situation, to beat the final bosses, to pray for everyone around you to help you out. So that's what I was kind of getting at, is Brothers, and there are very few games that do this, but it is something that I think is unique to video games, and something that I think people should push more for in this medium, is to create the effect of storytelling by mechanics that are implemented into the game. And this is even more kind of separated from that, because this is a real physical feeling. Like, your left hand is kind of sitting at your side.
It's a real phantom feeling. It's not just absolutely. It's not just a perceived phantom feeling. And you're right. You could show any Hollywood director or anyone interested in the arts like this game, and you could even tell them the entire story, and they might be like, "Oh, well, that's interesting. I guess the guy dies in it, and that's unexpected." But they're still not going to have the same experiences when they play it. And then I think that. I wasn't even thinking, even knowing that older brother dies, I wasn't thinking about the phantom feeling much at all. And then it wasn't until I felt it, and I wasn't even expecting it. I was just like, oh, this is weird. And then, yeah.
It's also the impact of you having played it in one single sitting, because it is a short game. It's 3 hours long. And so having that controller for the entire time means that it makes that much more of an impact when it finally happens.
Exactly. Like, my thumbs were all warmed up. They'd been working in sync for 3 hours straight playing this one video game, and all of a sudden they weren't.
Right, and that's the journey as well, right? It's the building of the relationship between the brothers is occurring simultaneously as you are getting that relationship between the two analog sticks working perfectly in your head. Mm. And it's just this wonderful synchronous element that is, it's just so absolutely unique and...
It's fantastic. And it's an incredibly sad ending, but it's a really impactful one in a good way. And
absolutely.
It's really... it's such a strong finish.
It's also, I think, the thing that a lot of people take away is that final sequence where you have to finally cross the water. Because the whole game, it's been reinforced again and again that the younger brother cannot swim. He doesn't have the strength to do so. And it's also kind of implied from earlier on, his mother died through drowning. So he has this fear, this kind of thing that he has to get over about swimming. And by the end, the older brother is gone. And the only way that he can... push himself forward and get through that final area is for you to hold down the left hand trigger on the controller to kind of...
Who represents the older brother.
Right, who's kind of like, he has now taken his place, or in some sense maybe not taken his place, but like he is relying on the memory of his older brother. He's taking the strength of his older brother to himself to finally push through that last hurdle, which he can get back to the father and give the medicine to. So... yeah, that's really that. I think if there's a moment I point out in that game, it's that moment, because that's when it really 100% clicks.
Yeah. So, absolutely incredible game. Such a great game to play when you've got a gaming funk.
Absolutely.
Really keen to like try and experience more shorter, impactful games that you can play in a single sitting, and really go for it. And that's something that's often lacking, unfortunately, from Nintendo systems, and it's something that I really hope the Switch can remedy. Sort of, you mentioned the phrase triple eyes,
right? It's just a thing that's kind of come into vogue recently.
Triple A independent games,
independent games that kind of are cut above the rest.
Exactly.
So things like Inside, things like Shovel Knight, and the like that Nintendo don't get many of them, and I feel like in order for Switch to be healthy, they definitely need to support that stuff. And it seems like what we've heard, that's going to be happening with them supporting the Unity engine and Unreal and all that stuff, that a lot of these engines that indie developers use is definitely going to ease the process of them being like, well, yeah, why wouldn't I put it on the Switch? I might as well. It's an extra platform. And that makes a lot of sense. So, and there's some great stuff throughout that game as well, like just moments that are awesome, like the tower sequence when you're roping with the brothers and using momentum to swing from place to place. The goats that appear for literally a minute but have a really funny implementation. just really cool instances. And my personal favorite is the valley of the Battle of the Giants, where you come to this area and this huge battle has taken place and these dead giants just litter the field, and you basically go through a process of like moving their limbs out the way, pushing arrows and even firing arrows into giants' heads to kind of clear a path for you to get through. It's just a really chilling and an effective area, in my opinion.
So yeah, MBZ, that was quite a game for me to start off 2017 with. It's going to take some beating. But MBZ, what have you been playing recently?
So I have been in London quite a lot over the holidays, which meant that handheld gaming was at the forefront.
Oh boy.
I beat Dragon Quest VII. I know we talked about it last time that I was literally on the final boss as we recorded that episode. Turned out that I beat the final boss first time, which I was really happy with. Generally, I think Dragon Quest VII is a much easier game than IX, in the sense that you don't have to grind as much. But if you do grind, it definitely helps you kind of beef things out. And the reason I liked grinding in that game is because it had a purpose beyond just leveling me up. It had the purpose of getting new job classes, which meant that I was learning new abilities. And eventually, by the end game, I had like 3 fully classed out people and a 4th member who had the abilities that I kind of wanted her to. And despite the fact that I was kind of running low on mana the entire battle and I didn't have any items left, I just really had to manage my resources, I was able to survive the attacks long enough and to kind of push on through. That final boss battle has 4 different fucking phases. Like, and I hate this at the end of JRPGs where they're like,
what were you expecting?
I know, what was I expecting? It's like, here's my real final form. but in the end, it turned out to just work out. It was a tough fight, but I did it first time, and I'm really glad I finished that game off. It was really cool. And I encourage people to check it out because it's one of those underplayed Dragon Quest games, and I'm glad it got a release here. And also, I was going on Twitter recently being like, I kind of decided I want to play through all the Dragon Quest games, but also all the Final Fantasy games, and I realize that's an insane task. But I think that is a series for both of which that I want to have a better understanding of. And I think playing through all of them probably will give me that. So that might happen at some point. We'll see. But what I've actually been playing, I started out with Persona 3 Portable, which is the PSP version of Persona 3, which was originally released on PlayStation 2. It is the prequel, of course, to Persona 4, not in terms of story, because these games are like Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest, where their stories are independent of one another, but they retain elements like enemies and themes and mechanics and things like that. So it's a completely new setting, completely different place. And Persona 5 is now coming out in April. It was delayed. It was going to be February. And that's the reason I decided to start this game, because I'm like, okay, well, I can actually feasibly finish this in time for Persona 5 to come out and be able to jump straight into that without having to worry and not having the baggage of not having played, you know, the multiple games beforehand and wanting to, you know, once I've played Persona 5, I would feel like going backwards to 3 would be even harder. So I thought I'd just get out of the way, you know, and like make sure that I didn't have that kind of come down after a real high. So I've kind of set myself up now, but I think I will be able to beat Persona 3 by the time April rolls around. And so essentially from the off, it feels like Persona 4, but a little bit of a step back in a few different ways. I'd say the intro is not as compelling. I know a lot of people complain about Persona 4 being a slow start, but the thing I really liked about it is it takes time to introduce characters to you, to introduce the world, and to set up this murder mystery, which kind of runs at the core of what Persona 4 is and its storyline. So that's something that really interested me because, as I've talked about before in the past, I love Ace Attorney, I love Danganronpa. Anything where there's a good murder that's been done and there's a good mystery to follow it, you've hooked me right away. It's just one of those tropes that I'm very much suckered for. And Persona 3 doesn't really have anything like that. Its kind of conceit is there is an hour valley that none of us experience after midnight. So as soon as the clock hits midnight, everyone who is a normal person suddenly turns into a coffin, and there are certain special people who are alive, not alive, but who can experience this hour. I think it's called the Dark Hour, which is basically this hidden hour that takes place between midnight and midnight 01 in the real world. And essentially what happens is during that time, like, this tower appears in the middle of wherever this is set in Japan, and monsters come out and you have to fight them and all that stuff. So that's kind of the conceit of it, and your main character is someone who is able to be awake during this period of time. So the way it works with dungeons is every evening you have the option, if you want to go to this tall tower and start training and get your characters leveled up and ready for missions. And I think a lot of people have complained about it in the past because it's very much a grind fest. The fact that the main stuff dungeon-wise doesn't really change up is different in Persona 4 because you have character-based dungeons that have a different feel to them. They're also randomly generated, but they have theming that is kind of more palatable. Now, I don't know how it continues story-wise because it seems like every full moon on the calendar, which is once a month, there seems to be an event that takes place which will change your location and put you in a different scenario and give you a boss battle and all that stuff. But so far, like, story-wise, it hasn't really been hitting me over the face. Like, there's not a lot of progression going on. There's not a lot of characters interacting with me as much as I would like them to. And so I do feel like it's a little bit of a step back, which makes sense because this game was made before that. But as I've gone on, it started to become clear that the social links will slowly start to seep in. And there are characters. I just joined the Kendo Club, so I got a character from that who I'm hanging out with. And then I joined the like school council, so I can hang out with those people. And so eventually over time, you're going to build up this roster of different people, and you're going to have to start making decisions. Okay, which social link do I want to advance? Which characters do I like the most? And so your schedule starts to pan out. But the first kind of couple of weeks, I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to hang out at this coffee shop, I guess. And then that's all my time done. And I increase some stats, but like, I'm not really getting anything out of that. Whereas with the characters, you're actually getting dialogue and choices and development through them. But the one thing that's really irked me that I've heard people talk about is the main party members, the people that I'm spending the most time with in battle and the people who are kind of core to the storyline. Apparently, I can't start their social links until like the end of November. And this game starts, the calendar starts in April. So that's like a good 5 whole months before I can even start a social link with these characters. And for me, that was like one of the core aspects of Persona 4, was being able to cultivate these friendships with these people as early as possible and making sure that you schedule it out to be with the people you like the most of the time, so that by the end you kind of max things out and they become better in battle as a result of you hanging out with them more. So that was really unfortunate, and I'm not sure if the story will pick up more, if there's more like, you know, because Persona 4 has things like where you go camping and you go and hang out at this bar, and there's this whole thing about drinking alcohol and they're really young, and it's a very funny scene, and I don't know how much of that is in the game, but I'm hoping it kind of does more, because I think a lot of people do respect the story of Persona 3 and say it's pretty good. So, you know, I'm having a good time with it. The other thing with Persona 3 on the PSP is it doesn't have the power of a PlayStation 2, and so when you're exploring the school, it's not a case of you running around with your character and going into doors and seeing people with polygonal models and everything. It's much more of a drawn back perspective, and you move a cursor around, and it's basically like a point and click thing where you see doors on the map and you're just clicking them to go into them and see characters kind of like sprites on a screen as opposed to polygonal models. And I understand why they did that, because the PSP couldn't handle it, but I would really have liked to do the PS2 version, which has like all these models. The problem is, like, the PS2 version itself has problems where you can't command party members in battle unless they're you, so you can't, like, you have to rely on the AI essentially, which is a bit of another problem. So it seems like neither version is like the perfect one. People say the PSP one is kind of the best of both worlds, but it's this kind of disconnect where I really enjoyed running around the school in Persona 4, and I don't get that in this version, which sucks, but, you know, it's compromise, and understandably so. I think it's going to pick up. So far, definitely not hit me in the same way that Persona 4 did, but I didn't really expect it to. I know there are people who prefer this version to that one, but I'll see you in 50 hours, I guess, when that's all finished and polished off.
Another lengthy RPG.
Yeah, you know, Bally, I just spent 60 hours in Dragon Quest VII. What better thing to do than to jump into another one?
I know.
Love it. The other thing I'm playing is much shorter and much more palatable to listening to podcasts and just hanging out and chilling. That is Castlevania Aria of Sorrow. As everyone knows, on the Game Boy Advance.
Okay.
Game Boy Advance. As everyone knows, I have been going through the history of the Castlevania series from Symphony of the Night onwards, which means all the Metroidvanias as they came out in chronological order, I am playing in that chronological order. So I played Symphony of the Night, Circle of the Moon, and Harmony of Dissonance, and I think I played all of those like a couple of years ago, and last year I didn't play any Castlevania games except for the NES game, which was my number 5 game in my game that didn't come out that year list, which was great, and I really enjoyed it, and I thought it's a cool thing. But I wanted to get back into the swing of these Metroid-style ones, and a great point to jump back in, Aria of Sorrow. Most people consider the best of the games that came after Symphony of the Night, including all the GBA and DS releases, and it's really cool. I'm enjoying it a lot. It's very much doing the same thing as all these games do, which is, hey, you're in a castle, go kill things, have fun, explore the map, find upgrades, everything that you expect out of this style of this thing. And it is set in the future. It's set in the year 2035, which to be honest, the writing is not good. Again, like, I just don't think these games really do narrative at all in any way competently. But there's some characters in there that are hinting to, like, oh, maybe Alucard is here again, and maybe there's something happening with Dracula and this moon castle, and it's weird. You meet a bunch of characters who I'm not really keeping track of, and I don't really know who they are. But so far, it's been a great, great ride, and there are some systems there that they've added which kind of change things up. So instead of the hearts, which is what you used to do in Castlevania games to use your sub-weapons, you now have a mana bar, which refills automatically. It's very slow over time, but it will refill. But what that allows you to do is kind of maybe experiment a bit more with your sub-weapons and use them more frequently, because you know that you're going to be able to charge it up as time goes on. And the other thing is, the sub-weapons in this game are kind of switchable on the fly. You don't have to carry one and then randomly find another one and decide whether to switch between them. All the sub-weapons are based on monsters and their abilities. So at the start of the game, you get a lance, which you can just fling, and it's the soul of one of the monsters that you beat at the very start. And so there is a random percentage chance every time you kill something that you'll collect a soul from them, and then you can go into the menu and be like, okay, I want to use this soul, and it will take up this much mana every time I use it. And you can kind of switch about depending on what enemies you're fighting and what is most useful for your current situation. So that's a nice way to change it up, and I think it allows a lot of experimentation and things like that. A lot of upgrades and abilities, everything seems pretty standard so far. I've got the double jump, I've got the slide so I can go under gaps. A cool one that they just added was walking on water, so I just unlocked that. I'm like, oh, this is interesting, this has not really been done before. So there's certain areas where a lot of water that you have to get across, and there are kind of like high up reaching platforms that you couldn't jump to from out the water, but now that you can stand on it, hey, guess what, you can now go back there. So yeah, definitely, I'm like maybe 3 hours in, and it is just, you know, ticking all the boxes. It's one of those things I can just sit back, listen to something, and just run on through, level up, kill some things, find different parts of the map. And they have given me a warp, fast travel, should I say, warp points between the castle pretty early on in the game, which I appreciate, because sometimes they kind of hold that back a bit too much and make you wait for it. But overall, I'm enjoying it. It's a Castlevania game. It's probably a real good one. And so far, I think it's better than Circle of the Moon and Harmony of Dissonance. I think Circle of the Moon was way too hard. I think Harmony of Dissonance way too easy. I think this one stands a nice balance in between. I've had some tough times with bosses, and they've been challenging me along the way. So definitely up with Symphony of the Night so far. We'll see if it surpasses it, but I'm going to have to get to the end. So I'll do that. I'll keep playing this Aria of Sorrow. And that is basically going to be it for the video games, what we have been playing. Thanks, everyone, for listening to that. We're going to be back after the break with some of our 2017 Nintendo predictions. It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be good. So you want to stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with some of that. Alright, everyone, welcome back to the show. It's the second half, and we're in January 2017. What does that mean, Bally? We have a whole year ahead of us.
Probably the most exciting year of the podcast so far by a considerable margin, yeah. I'd argue, for Nintendo.
Absolutely. I mean, they have new hardware coming out. There are things that are going to come with that, such as new video games. There are a lot of things that have been held back. I think generally, Barry, over the last couple of years of Wii U especially, it's felt barren. And not just barren in the sense of, hey, this is the end of one console into another. It felt like they really stepped back and were like, okay, we need to, like, kill this thing and save stuff for later on.
Everything has been saved and delayed for this year.
It seems like there's an avalanche coming, essentially.
There is an avalanche.
Like, there is this, it's just going to erupt, and the mountain will be full, and it'll be rolling down the hill, so... exciting stuff ahead, which means that for this big segment, we're going to be doing our predictions for the year ahead. And of course, the Switch event is coming up later this week, so that will factor into it, which means we have added predictions this time. So we don't have three, we have five instead, just to cover that base, make sure we can get as much stuff out there as possible, and more reason for us to fail next year when we are inevitably wrong about everything.
What would predictions be if you never go back to your previous predictions and score them, NBZ?
Exactly. We need to go back in time to January of 2016.
Well, we were sitting in this very spot.
In this very room.
Sitting in your room right now recording this with you. And
absolutely.
We were right here exactly a year ago doing this exact same episode.
And so here we are. We're doing it once again. And Bali...
So do mine or yours first? We had three each.
Let's go with... mine first.
So last year I was first, so this time it's coming back to you.
Okay.
So MVZ, your first prediction was that. These are all pretty hilarious, to be honest. NX will be fully unveiled at E3. The Nintendo Direct prior to E3. There's going to be a Nintendo Direct prior to E3 that describes the concept of the NX. And then the actual NX was going to come out in the handheld part of the NX was going to come out in November 18th, 2016 for $179 US. And then in the spring of 2017 was going to be the console component for $280 US.
Wow, that's a hell of a fuck up, isn't
yeah.
it? Holy shit. In some senses, I feel like I've gained some correctness from there in the sense that NX was revealed in a short thing and then was going to be revealed properly later, but that's about it as far as that goes, because I believe it was
I think that's true. I don't think it's worth half a point, but I believe it's true.
I think that it was very soon into the year that we found out that there was going to be no NX at that time stuff at E3. It was like March or something. So already at that time I was already screwed. Like, it was going to be
Do you remember that prediction now? Or is
I
that,
do. It's come okay. back to me. Yeah.
Right. This like, other one.
Oh
might
God!
Come back
it's all. It's all flooding through my head again.
So your second prediction was that in the new Zelda, in some way,
uh-huh.
it's going to be a relation or the word horse in the name, or like a word like horse, like stallion or pony, and this was going to be named at E3.
Well, it was named at E3.
So you're right, Zelda was named at E3.
Do I get a half point for that? I don't know.
Are we considering Breath of the Wild horse related?
Okay, so horses are wild. You find wild
they
horses out there.
They also breathe.
They do breathe. Horses breathe, and they are found in the wild. I think that I get half a point for this, Valley.
So we'd just be super generous.
Yes, let's give
point.
Me half a point, because that's a dumb
half
prediction
a
that I want to get a half a point
There you
for.
Go, half a point. Finally, Nintendo will have zero Western third-party support in their NX announcement. If anything, they will only get token support from EA and Activision, etc. The secret is that Nintendo will be buffed by Japanese third parties, and they're going to steal Sony's thunder in Japan. So they're going to have remakes of games like Final Fantasy, and they're going to have Final Fantasy 15 and Dragon Quest. It's all going to come to NX.
Okay.
And then we got into like a big raging debate where I took the stance of Colin Moriarty, where I said that if that's Nintendo's plan, that they're finished and that they need to appeal to a wider audience. So
yeah, I mean, that whole they'll have no third parties was kind of completely shot off my head with Skyrim being there and NBA being there.
Yeah.
There's like two front runners of video games on that system.
I mean, I feel like they're... current plan is to also do those other things you're talking about, but
yeah,
they're going to do both. And I think your argument was that they're not going to do both, they're going to focus more on the Japanese side.
I don't know, I just thought that people wouldn't care is the thing. It wasn't necessarily that they wouldn't get any third-party support from Western publishers, I thought that it would probably be muted. Like, and I think there's still a possibility that it is muted, that it is just, hey, here's token launch support, and then we all run away again. But I think that that Japanese stuff is generally looking like it's going to work out, I think. Like, they've confirmed Dragon Quest is coming to Switch, and I have a feeling that Square is going to pay off that Cloud and Smash Brothers thing pretty well with the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Do you get half a point or not?
I don't know. I'll say give me a half point, then we can leave it there.
Half point, we'll go. So you got a mighty...
Actually, you know what? No, don't give me a point. No, because I said, because we got fucking Skyrim and NBA in that
no,
Switch
that's
reveal.
True. It kind of shoots down the other half. You're exactly. Right. So we half a point out of three, MBZ.
All right. Not great.
How do you feel about that?
Pretty terrible. I mean, I think I remembered giving a prediction that NX would be released at the end of 2016. And I remember that throughout the year, and I was like, yeah, well, that got fucked up real soon into the year, that it was delayed and that it was going to come out in March, and that Zelda was also delayed to coincide with it. So, yeah, I mean, all of our knowledge back then was completely proven false, unfortunately.
Shall we get to my predictions then?
Yeah, what were yours from last year?
So my first one was, this was a really safe one, the first half of it. We will play some form of NX, handheld or console, by the end of 2016.
There you go.
It will be shown and revealed at E3 for the first time in the form of a press conference, which will return to E3. Nintendo, we're going to do a press conference, MBZ.
Well, they are doing a press conference, only it's in Japan and it's in January.
Yeah.
I really, both of us were very certain that it was going to be a 2016 release.
So, and I'm wrong on both counts because it's already been revealed in a press non-press conference form.
Yeah,
exactly. So I'll take a
nil point.
I'll take zero.
Nil point.
Then I did some launch lineup predicting, which okay. is maybe a bit awkward because we don't really know.
Maybe we can revisit this next week, next time on the show.
So this one was: we'll get some sort of remastered Zelda Wii U game for the NX. But the system will also launch with Pikmin 4 and Retro's 3D Metroid.
Wait, you said a remastered Zelda game.
Remastered's the wrong word. I'm talking about like a remake, an added addition.
We're not getting that on Switch. We're getting Breath of the Wild. That's not a remake or remaster. That's just the same game.
It's a copy of the original
that was on
the Wii U.
No, I'm not letting you get away with this. Fucking Twilight Princess HD, that's a remake or remaster, not Breath of the Wild.
Not Breath of the Wild. So yeah, well, we don't really know about Pikmin 4 or Retro's potential 3D Metroid, so we'll
revisit this.
We'll revisit that. It's zero for now. And then I said, the 3DS and the Wii U aren't going to have a last hurrah. I was confident that Fire Emblem Fates and Metroid Prime Federation Force were the last, in quotation marks, big games, and that nothing else would be announced, and that we were now in the era of NX, or what we now know as Switch. Well, that was proven massively wrong by the fact they had an entire 3DS Direct where they revealed a new Pikmin game and a new Mario Sports game,
right.
And they revealed Yoshi's Woolly World for the 3DS, uh-huh. And they also revealed Super Mario Maker for the 3DS. So
ever
definitely...
the Ocean, ever Oasis, that thing that Grezzo is making,
yes,
that weird RPG thing,
ever
coming
Oasis,
out next year,
I think. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff still coming, even if some of that is remakes and remasters. That is still a lot of new stuff. A lot of money being pumped into the 3DS still, which we were a bit surprised by as well, I think.
We'll see how quickly Nintendo drop off that. I think it depends a lot on how Switch does, whether 3DS is going to get more support. It makes sense that they would do that.
Was that Direct, like, well after we knew how delayed Switch was going to be, or were we, like, sort of, oh, we've now had the Direct, I guess Switch is going to be delayed?
Which Direct?
The Direct one that revealed all those 3DS games.
Nintendo had said they were going to talk about NX in 2016 at that point, and we still hadn't heard them say anything about NX in 2016 when the 3DS Direct happened. So, it was definitely an interesting couple of months there while we waited for the drop. And the drop happened, and it was in October, and it was a 3-minute trailer, and that's literally all they've said about it. The whole of 2016.
And Jimmy Fallon.
And Jimmy Fallon. That's
true. Those are literally the only two things.
Those are the only two places we've seen it live and working. And yeah, well, Bally.
Everything else is rumors and speculation.
So what do you have there? A half point or no points?
No points. I think it's pretty fair to say that my prediction was that they'd cut off Wii U and 3DS. They might have cut off Wii U, but I think that was a given. And they've definitely not cut off 3DS. So
I'm they have not. With
zero. So,
to be honest, I'm not sure if I even deserve half a point for whatever that was.
Have we both got a clean zero?
Yeah, I think, to be honest,
have royally screwed us over with their delays to the point where they've made our predictions non-valid.
Yeah, null and void. All these predictions
by the fact that some of them are still applicable for this year, which absolutely is very, very sad. But we're in this year now. So
yes,
it's all looking up.
Tis true.
Shall we get into some predictions for 2017?
Let's get in to our predictions for 2017. Bally, I will give you the honors of going first.
Right.
What is your first prediction?
So we don't know each other's predictions, we should say.
No. So we may have crossover.
A bit of overlap.
I don't know. I've tried to go a bit out there with it a little bit. So
mine are a bit all over the place.
Anyway, okay.
The new retro game.
Retro Studios. Owned by Nintendo, the big Western.
I previously had said that it's going to be a Metroid game in last year's predictions, as we just mentioned.
Okay, yes.
I don't think it's a Metroid game.
I don't think many people believe that anymore.
I think it's a new IP.
Okay.
I think it's coming holiday 2017.
Right.
Feels weird saying that now.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about sort of genres that Nintendo haven't gone into.
Totally.
And we mentioned one in particular. So I'm going to say that Retro are making a new stealth game.
Okay. How does this manifest? Is this a cartoonish-esque style, or in the mold of retro?
Way that you could never have predicted the world and lore of Splatoon for a shooter.
Totally.
It'll do the same for stealth in some way. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be cartoony.
Sure.
But it's going to have new characters that we're going to like. There's going to be Amiibo. You know there's going to be
Amiibo.
Totally.
Of course there is.
There's going to be Amiibo.
Look, if Box Boy can get an Amiibo, anything can get an Amiibo.
Exactly. So, I'm... what's it going to be? I really don't know. I think I think it's too difficult to call, but I think retro and stealth is going to be my first prediction.
I like that. I think that is an interesting direction for them to go in, and I think they would be capable of doing something like that. I want to figure out, like, there must be some kind of mechanic that they're going to rely on. And especially, you talked about Splatoon for a second. Splatoon actually could work as a stealth game in the sense that, like, you're diving onto that ink.
Yeah.
I think that actually worked really well. If they were to do, like, a spin-off of Splatoon, a stealth game with that could work really well. But yeah, I'm sure they could come up with some.
I mean, are you in agreement with the idea that Retro's game will come out holiday 2017 and that it's not Metroid? Or are we getting into your predictions and we can stay quiet?
No, I haven't done a retro prediction. Okay. I think holiday 2017 is an interesting one because they have a few options here, right? Launch, they could have Zelda or Mario or both. Mario is also a game that is potentially a very strong holiday title, but Mario is also basically done at this point, according to all sources, and seems like it would be a strong thing to kick off the system with. So then you're left with the quandary of what is the holiday game. And I'm not sure that Pikmin is a big enough name to be a holiday game. Maybe Pokemon Stars is big enough, but then again, that's not even a new Pokemon game. That's just going to be a third entry in the Sun and Moon series. So when you think about it, Retro's had a long time since Tropical Freeze was 2014. That's probably 3-4 years, maybe, since they wrapped up development on Tropical Freeze. You would imagine that they have made something by now. And Holiday 2017 works, I think. I think, yeah, because I've been struggling to fill this hole. It's like, what goes in that holiday slot? That makes a lot of sense. And I'm hopeful that it's possible. So
MBZ, what's your first prediction?
My first prediction concerns our good old pals, the Joy-Cons.
I've got one related to this as
okay.
well we can maybe do. But
It might be the same. I believe that in a Nintendo Direct later in the year, I don't think this is going to be mentioned during the Switch reveal because I think they want to try and keep a clearer message. But I think later in the year there'll be a Nintendo Direct in which they announce multiple Joy-Con options, which will include variations such as one with a real D-pad, so you can switch that in if you want. There'll be one with the uninverted joystick, so it's like the Wii U Pro controller where you have both sticks at the top if you want. And there will also be a variety of color variations, whether that be based on old Nintendo consoles or just different colorations as they've done with 3DSs in the past. It makes so much sense for them to have something like that that is customizable, because there are so many people who love the backplates on the new 3DS, and there are so many people who buy all the color variations and want different colored game pads and things like that. So to continue in that vein, I think the Nintendo are going to go hard on the peripheral angle with the Joy-Cons.
I'll come quickly in with my second prediction, which is very similar, where okay. I'm predicting less so the functionality aspects in terms of D-pads, analog sticks, and things like that. Yes. And I'm going full-on customizable color-based. And not just colors, but patterns, characters right. on them, just like you were mentioning with the smaller new 3DS
right.
customizable covers. And I think this is going to be already big and in shops by holiday 2017.
So, but do you think it's going to be talked about during the Switch event, or do you think they're going to announce it later in the year?
I think later in the year. I think maybe part of E3 potentially, or even later than that. But okay. just sort of like, and there's going to be millions of them. They're going to be all over shops, and people are going to be picking up Joy-Cons left, right, and center, and attaching them to their, what do you call the hub, the main bit,
the Switch?
The Switch, yeah. attaching them to the Switch, the screen, the tablet, the block.
Yes.
Yeah, so almost the same prediction. I mean, is your timing for holiday 2017?
No, I just said a Nintendo Direct later in the year. Okay. I would imagine maybe after E3 even.
Yeah.
Potentially, because that feels like the sort of announcement they would make in a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's not going to hit everyone. It's for the hardcore people. I want to question you, Bally. Do you think that you would go out there and buy a customizable Joy-Con if it was something that tickled your fancy?
Not for the sake of what it looks like, but if it's for the sake of having, say, another holster controller. So you know the things that the Joy-Con plug in to make yes. it look like a dog's head?
The grip.
The grip. Joy-Con That's grip. What I wanted to name before, the grip. So if you can buy another grip with some Joy-Cons with, say, Mario's face on them, or yeah. like, I don't know, Link's face or Toon Link, I'd happily go out and buy, say, a Toon Link Joy-Con set in order for when you're around at my house to have some more controllers to play multiplayer games. I think that'd yeah. be great. So in terms of buying new controllers, I'd happily jump in on the customizable Joy-Cons, but in terms of just purely aesthetic, not really.
Yeah, I would be much more in line of, hey, does this have a real D-pad on it? Okay, well, I'm throwing away my other one and only using this one.
throwing away?
Yeah, I mean, not throwing away, but I'll just leave it in a drawer somewhere. Like, if I have a real D-pad on a Joy-Con, there's no way I'm going back to that fucking four-button setup. It doesn't make any sense to me. So, yeah, I think that it's going to be profitable for them because people
it's like Amiibo.
Exactly.
There's going to be loads of them.
Collectors are going to go wild for it. And it's not just that they can customize. I think there's real great functionality that you can bring with something like this. It's like the attachment on the end of the Wii remote. Like, there were multiple things that plugged into that, and it's possible for them to keep that going.
If like this idea of everyone traveling with their Switches to friends' houses and abroad and going everywhere with them, like the sort of the swag you can have by having some sort of, I don't know, a Pikachu Joy-Con on your
right.
Switch, and when you whap it out at a friend's house, and, oh, you've got the Pikachu Joy-Cons on your
I
Switch.
I know.
God, and every time you see your friend, they might have a different Joy-Con attached to their Switch. Like yeah. that's proper swag that I can imagine them a Nintendo going for. So those are my first two predictions already revealed.
Yes, yeah, so you'll be back, kind of we intersected there.
So I guess it's back to you for your second prediction,
okay.
MBZ.
All right, so Let's talk about how much the Switch will sell. How will it do in the marketplace by the end of 2017? I believe that Switch will sell through 8 million units by end of year 2017. The reason I do not think it will be 10 million units, which would probably be a roundabout suggestion, is I think Nintendo
they won't
are
make 10 million.
Well, yes. Well, Nintendo are not going to be good about getting this into retail places, and they are going to have some constraints going on, and it will be very difficult to find a Nintendo Switch for at least the first 2 months. It will be a sought after item, it will be a hot product, people will want one, and it's going to be a similar to Wii situation, not on the same echelon as the craziness that surrounded the Wii, but I think it's going to be a tough thing to find, and they're going to struggle to meet demand. But eventually they'll catch up, and by the end of the year, I think they will sit squarely at 8 million units having been sold, which I think is a solid estimate for how well they're going to do. If you're thinking about, you have the current Wii U install base, which is give or take 12, 13 million, and you think the amount of people who are going to be day one adopters, probably 3 to 4, you have the hardcore people who will pick it up over the rest of the year, and then you have the kind of casual people who've been on the boundaries of Nintendo for a few years but want to jump back in, and that will account for the extra sales leading up to 8 million.
Have any Nintendo systems done that before?
I have no idea. I have not looked up any research. I'm just basing this on pure bollocks, and that's my thought. Do you think that sounds too high, Bally? I mean, if we think about it, like,
maybe a bit too
PlayStation
high, but...
4 is currently at 50 million units sold. That's over the course of 3 and a bit years.
I think, bearing in mind how unsuccessful Wii U has been in terms of sales, and bearing in mind that Switch is going to come out in March, which is really early in the year, and bearing in mind it might even come out, I mean, we're going to maybe get into more game predictions in a second, but stuff like Zelda, potentially Mario, I've just hinted maybe a retro game end of the year, like the launch lineup is supposedly stellar, so you would think that 8 million is doable. So I think it's a higher echelon sort of goal to reach, but I think it's doable, yeah.
And I think especially because this is being targeted as a handheld, I think it's easily going to pick up support in Japan. And as if they have Monster Hunter there from launch and something like that, they can quickly get Japanese people on board with it. And it's going to pass the PS4 and the Wii U probably within its first year in terms of total sales. Because the 3DS in Japan, I think it's sold over 20 million compared to the PS4 and Wii U, which are both about like 1 to 2 million, which is a huge gap. Like, we're talking 20 million unit difference. Like, that's massive. So if the Japanese people are looking to replace their 3DS with something new, Switch is going to be it, and that makes sense as well to help kind of bump the numbers perhaps.
So we'll move on to my third prediction.
Yes, Bally.
So my third prediction is in line with this in some degree. I'm predicting Switch is going to be hot. It's going to do well.
Okay.
But the result of that heat is going to be that the third parties are going to stick around. And I'm not talking about just any old third parties. I'm talking about the Ubisofts, the Assassin's Creeds of this world, the EAs,
I mean,
the FIFAs.
Ubisoft stick around always, but like, unless Wii U happens.
That's where my prediction comes in. We're talking about properly sticking around. So I mean that the Switch is going to sell so well that companies like Ubisoft want to make the newest Assassin's Creed. They want to make a version of it on Switch.
Okay.
And FIFA is going to have the FIFA 18, whenever that comes out. I don't know. When does FIFA come out? Autumn?
Yeah.
It's going to come out on Switch as well. It might not be the same version as, say, the Xbox One or the PS4 or the PS4 Pro. Don't even want to go down that route now.
Yeah, let's not do that rabbit hole.
But regardless of the fact they have to make a separate version for Switch because of power, they will want to anyway because the Switch is going to be such a hot commodity.
Hmm.
And I think the selling point is that people who like FIFA, they're going to be like, hey, I could get FIFA on a Switch. The Switch is only going to be like, what, $200 to $250 or pounds. The benefit of that is that I can play it when I go on the go. And like, that's the whole selling point.
I think, and play football with my friends, and then we can all sit and play it in the park.
Yeah. That's going to be great with my Pikachu Joy-Cons. So like, I think there's just going to be a lot of success in that area where it's going to do so well that the hottest Assassin's Creed has to be on it, and you're not going to get the old remakes, and we'll see. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I struggle with Assassin's Creed particularly because Wii U had Assassin's Creed games for a couple of years.
Not the hottest ones.
It did. It had Black Flag. That was the hottest
right,
one at the time.
But it came out on Wii U much later than when it came out on other systems.
Black Flag, I believe, came out when it came out on other systems on Wii U.
That was like Creed, a 6-7 month gap.
There wasn't. I know this because I'll tell you. Assassin's Creed 3 came out at Wii U launch, and that was late for Assassin's Creed 3. Black Flag came out pretty much around the same time.
There was a gap to my knowledge, but
there might be a tiny gap, but
I made the point here that there will be no gap, and that there'll at least be a lot more marketing into it on top of the fact that there will be no gap.
So it would make sense that third parties would want to create software for the Switch if it is successful, right? Like, that is an obvious thing. The Wii was great, so they made stuff. It may not have been the same stuff, but they put stuff on there. The concern becomes power, though, doesn't it? And that's the thing, is like, Switch is not going to be hitting the same teraflops as the PS4 and Xbox One are, despite how much people will clamor about it and want it to happen. With a handheld form factor and all that stuff, you just aren't going to be able to hit those echelons. You're just not going to do it. So the question becomes, is it worth it to take the resources to downgrade your version of Assassin's Creed to be on Switch?
And that's my prediction, is that it will be worth it.
Okay. It's really difficult because we have the issue of like, well, do people buy third-party games on Nintendo systems? And the question always becomes...
chicken and egg.
Is it because those are bad versions so they don't buy them? Or is it because people on Nintendo systems just don't like buying third-party games? Or is it, to any degree, the fact that people who are going to buy the Switch already own a PS4 and... are not going to buy that version anyway because the PS4 is their system to play third-party games on. This is the problem I have with a lot of people in the industry, is they always complain about lack of third-party support. And they always say, if Nintendo had all these games, they'd do so well. And then I'm like, well, would you buy the version of Assassin's Creed on Switch if you already own a PS4? And I guarantee you all those journalists would be like, no, I'd buy the PS4 version because that's where it's best. That's where most people are playing. If it's a multiplayer game, that's where I'm going to play the most. So these arguments about, like, oh, Nintendo, if they get third parties, they'll be fine. You're not going to support those games because you're going to buy them on the third party console anyway.
That's where Switch is different against Wii U, is that the whole point of Switch is that the added benefit is on the go. Exactly. Right. The gamepad's great, but you can't go on the go. And it's been a really difficult argument both between Wii U, GameCube, and Wii, and N64. Like, what's the added value of having the Nintendo system versus the non-Nintendo system? And the answer is not much. Whereas now, potentially, there's a jump.
There's also the issue of, like, ecosystem, right? We have people like Colin Moriarty who's like, oh, I'm in on Switch, I'm going to buy things on Switch. And he always talks about third parties. Oh, yeah, third parties. Will Colin buy any third-party games on Switch? No.
Because
I'll tell you why.
The underpowered version.
No, I'll tell you why. Because Switch doesn't have trophies. And he cares about trophies.
We don't know Switch doesn't have trophies.
No, but what I'm saying is that it's not going... He's already built into an ecosystem. And most people, is what I'm saying, are built into an ecosystem.
Yeah.
They have their platform of choice. They have all their digital goods on there. They are bought in. They have their trophies. They have their profiles. They have their friends lists. All that stuff is embedded, right? And so in order to make that jump, Nintendo have to create an ecosystem which is open arms and just as good as the other competitors. But even then, it's really difficult to drag people away from what they're invested in. And people like Colin are invested in a ecosystem, which results in them preaching, hey, I'll do all this stuff on Switch, but they're not going to practice what they preach, right? And
I think
we have to
at least see Nintendo's hand in terms of an ecosystem and what they're going to offer with Switch. And I'm not saying it's going to be enough to switch someone like Colin Switch. Someone like Colin from the Sony ecosystem to the Nintendo one.
Yeah.
But who knows if Nintendo do chase trophies in some sort of way. I don't know.
Well, people thought the Wii U would, and didn't work out. So we'll see.
MBZ.
Yes.
What is your third prediction?
My third prediction is that Monolith Soft will announce Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I don't know what they're going to call it. XX, maybe? Xenoblade XL?
Triple X.
Triple X, Xenoblade Chronicles, Triple X.
Loads of boobie girls everywhere.
Well, you know, it's a Japanese anime JRPG.
Triple X.
So I wouldn't be surprised. I believe that at the Switch event in a few days, an impressive trailer will be shown.
Wow.
It will be touted that the world of Xenoblade Chronicles Triple X PowerPoint
parody...
When's
it coming out?
Let's calm down, Valley. Calm down.
I need it.
I don't think I'm going to give you a release date because I think that Monolith need time to work on this. I think it's probably going
to
be 2018.
I need time to beat the last one.
Yeah, this is going to be a 2018 game, probably holiday 2018, I would imagine, because it's going to be a big game. But it will be touted that the world is, quote, twice the size of Xenoblade Chronicles X. But they will also make it known in interviews and other such material that this is going to be a game that is much more focused on story, and it is going to basically blend elements from the original Xenoblade and its sequel to create
Will they increase the size of the font, though?
This is the real question. This is what everyone wants to know.
That's the kicker.
No, the secret is that they're actually going to release Xenoblade Chronicles X on PC so people can actually play it properly. That's the special sauce going in there. What do you think, Bally? Are Monolith going to show off their game? Is it too early for them to show off their game?
I think it is too early, but I think will Monolith Soft eventually have a new Xenoblade game on the Switch? 100%.
Of course.
But will there be some sort of Xenoblade Chronicles X remake in the middle or a remaster potentially? But I mean, I don't see why they can't announce it incredibly early and then it doesn't come out until holiday 2018 or even spring 2019, like you said. Like, remember how long Xenoblade Chronicles X was in?
It was a good 2.5 years or 3 years before we got that game. So
I think this idea that games are announced and then come out is something we always hope for, but never really happens when it comes to Nintendo. And maybe that's a change that they're going to make with the Switch.
It could be, but I also think that they want to generate excitement for console, and the best way to do that is to announce games no matter how far out they are. And look, if you're talking about the hype cycle and how much people are excited about stuff coming forward, Sony are the masters of it, because they have, the last couple of E3s, all they have done is announce games that are never coming out. Like Death Stranding, good luck that even being a PS4 game, you know? Like Shenmue 3, when the fuck's that happening? Who knows? I don't know, sometime. Final Fantasy 7 Remake, are you fucking kidding me? Welcome to my fucking... Hi, grandchildren. I hope you enjoy playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, because that's who's going to be playing it. You know, like, Nintendo could fall into a trap. I think Sony have potentially fallen into one by announcing all these things so, so early. But it makes sense for them to generate some excitement. I have more faith that someone like Monolith is going to produce a product than I do in Square Enix, for example.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good prediction. And, you know, January 12th, 13th. It's not far away, so that'll be interesting.
I'm going to be wrong in a few days, probably. So
my fourth prediction is that Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing mobile games are coming out this year. But not only that, they're also going to have two more mobile games that also come out this year.
Okay.
One is going to be Mario Kart related.
Ooh.
And the other one is going to be Zelda related. They're going head on, head first, into this mobile market. I think Super Mario Run is doing well enough where they can think, right, let's properly get on board with this. I think all four of these games that will come out in 2017, maybe this is a bit bold, all four of them to come out this year, but all four of them that are coming out in 2017 are going to have similar, or if not the same, scale of promotion as Super Mario Run. And I'm talking, you know, top of the iTunes store, top of your app store. It's right there, massive visibility. All similar model, where maybe Animal Crossing can be different, and I've not really thought deeply enough about Zelda and Mario Kart.
But right,
free to play, you play a bit. If you want the full thing, $8.99, $7.99. Like, it's going to be that similar scale of pricing. I think Animal Crossing can do a much more
variable,
smaller purchases. Oh, I want that set of furniture. Oh, right. I want this guy to visit
it's
my town.
It's almost custom built for microtransactions.
Customizable microtransactions, bring them in. We'll see. I think a lot of that is going to happen in 2017.
The thing with Mario Run that's really interesting to me is I don't think it's been a financial, like, juggernaut. It's done well. It's made them millions of dollars, clearly. I think the real kicker for Mario Run is that 90 million people downloaded that thing.
And that is who Mario is.
That is 90 million people who some of them didn't know what Mario was properly before then. And they now kind of do. A form of promotion, as a form of word of mouth, and a form of getting your brand out there and known, I think that's really what they want to take from this. And we'll see if it bears out in the sales of the new Mario game on Switch. But if they do the same thing with Mario Kart and with Zelda, and they are using these as avenues by which to push the real product on their actual console, that could potentially result in a lot of people becoming interested in the system, picking them up and getting those specific games because they have been kind of weaned into the idea of, I like a Zelda game, I like a Mario Kart game, right? The danger, though, I think, especially with something like Mario Kart, is if they make an experience on mobile that is good enough from a Mario Kart perspective, I don't know how many people are willing to cross that barrier again. Because they're the kind of people who bought Mario Kart on Wii and DS, and they're like, okay, this is Mario Kart. If it's kind of similar to that in terms of quality of gameplay and options, they're going to think, well, I have this on my phone. It's a Mario Kart game on my phone, and, you know, I can just kind of tilt it about and, you know, drive, and the courses are fine. Is
this
that enough?
This
to
links
push
to my
edge?
Final prediction, which I'll get to later.
Okay.
But, yeah, I agree. I think Nintendo are very scared of, oh, I've already bought Super Mario Run. Why would I want to buy a 2D Mario platformer on the Nintendo Switch?
Right.
I think they are terrified of that. But at the same time, you're exactly right. 90 million people downloaded a Mario game. That is incredible name and character recognition of very valuable IP for Nintendo. And like we said before, like of those 90 million, 3 million bought. That's an average conversion rate according to most free-to-play games. Bearing in mind Mario, Super Mario Run is so much more expensive than your average mobile game. That's pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's a lot of positives. I think Nintendo are learning from their mobile experience. And I think that it's really cool that it's no longer this massive opportunity out in the wild that they don't know anything about and haven't even tried. It's now something they've tried. They've done Miitomo, they've done Mario, they had links with Pokemon Go, obviously.
Yes.
So there's progress being made, and I think there's going to be a lot of progress made in 2017.
Okay. Sounds good, Bally. I didn't really think about like mobile games beyond Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem, but those are the two big IPs that would make sense. So we will see. I'm sure that in some form or another, we will see some more mobile stuff happening this year. So next up is my fourth prediction, and that prediction is the prediction. The one prediction to rule all predictions, Bally. That happens every time, and I keep saying it. And I'm never going to shut the fuck up.
I think I know what this is going to be.
I'm never going to shut the fuck up. New 2D Metroid will be announced for Nintendo Switch. Let's flesh it out a bit, though. I don't want to be, just say that.
When's it coming? Who's making it? What's the deal?
I don't know who's making it. I'm not put that much thought. But I'll tell you, it's going to be a sequel to Metroid Fusion.
Oh,
we're finally going past the timeline. We're
excellent.
Not doing any
we're,
more
we're
of this.
We're finally making ground.
Exactly. It will be codenamed Metroid 5. It will be revealed at the Switch event, but will be very much teased. It will not be a full-blown thing. It will be a Metroid 5 codename.
Made by the makers of AM2R.
Oh, Jesus. Hold me.
Come into our family, makers of AM2R. We are the Nintendo family.
It will finally be given a title at E3 2017, where it will be more fully unveiled. We'll get gameplay and we'll see much more of what this game is about. And I think that it is possible that it hits holiday. I don't think Metroid 2D Metroid is a big enough title to be a tentpole, but I think it's a nice September game potentially. If not, early 2018 is also possible. So yeah,
exciting.
It's gonna happen, Bally. It's gonna happen one day.
Are we talking sprites kind of style, or are we talking, you know, new Super Mario Bros. 2D but 3D?
Yes, I unfortunate as it is, I think we're gonna get polygons here, and I don't want that to
be
the case.
It could look good.
I would rather have it be so here there are the two options. There's the option of the polygons, which you can kind of put shaders in and make it look like it has kind of artistic merit to it.
Almost there's, 2D, but still cel-shaded.
Right. There's also the Ubisoft model, or the Ori and the Blind Forest model, where it is all kind of painted, and it is all...
What about the Wario Shake Dimension?
Potentially, yeah,
area.
That as well. That's,
animated.
That's kind of, a more, like, fully realized animation style. I would love that. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Goodfeel...
Oh, boy.
But I'm not the biggest fan of Goodfeel as from a gameplay perspective. I think they make amazing-looking games.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would trust them with Metroid from a gameplay standpoint.
No.
But hey, you know.
Well, if they just came in at last minute and did the art or something.
Yeah, they could do.
Just give them the structure and someone, and they just make the art.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they kind of split things up dependent on, lots of teams collaborate within Nintendo, you know, Monolith work on Zelda and things like that. So it's possible. It's a thing that could happen. Bally, I know that you are someone who's going to be honking the horn for Prime, for another Prime to come down the line, but how do you feel about 2D Metroid being potential? Is my dream ever going to come true?
I think it will come true. I think that, yes, I think there will be more Prime games. Yes, I think there will be more 2D Metroid games. I think, like, We've been having this prediction since the times of DS before we started the podcast, yeah. Like long time ago. Like this, if there's a time to get back into 2D Metroid, it's Switch. Like it's the time where we're predicting that Nintendo fans who might have been left out in the cold for a while are coming back. This is where they all come back. This is the people who like the NES, they like the SNES. They come back now. This is when you come back. So if you're getting those people back now, those people like 2D Metroid and they want a system that plays 2D Metroid. And Nintendo should give them some 2D Metroid.
That's right.
So I think it's your prediction, while it's seemed very far off in the past, is feeling closer than it used to be. I'm not saying it necessarily will come this year, but maybe this year or next year. Like you hinted, maybe spring 2018, potentially. I think you got a better shot. You got a better shot at it this time.
All right, fair enough.
So my final prediction is almost a wider discussion, a wider crossroads for Nintendo and a number of franchises. And okay. I was reading some Emily Rogers tweets about this, sort of her personal views on this situation. This is hard to explain. So Mario Kart is stronger than it's ever been in terms of sales. Is a difficult situation because obviously the Wii U didn't sell very well, but for the Wii U not selling very well, Mario Kart 8 sold incredibly well.
It's actually shocking.
It's how ridiculous.
Good. It's literally half of the people who own the system own Mario Kart, if not more. I think it might be 60%
so
of
Wii
U
agreed
owners.
That Mario Kart is incredibly healthy. It's a brand that's well recognized. The games are great by and large, and
yes.
People recognize it and buy it, crucially. And it's got like a very mainstream audience. So
right.
Mario Kart is healthy. The rest of Nintendo racing games, I'm talking Wave Race, F-Zero, even throwing something like Diddy Kong Racing. Like these things are just, there's not been any of them in a very long time.
Mm.
They're completely off and off in the distance, off left out in the cold. There needs to be a coming together between these franchises, and I'd be tempted to say that you could even have a situation where you keep Mario Kart going, but then we've talked about the smashification of Mario Kart, so we're talking about extra characters. Link, your Samus, your Pokemon, your NES, they're all coming into Mario Kart, they're going to have their own courses, they're going to have all these things. What if the smashification happened separately to Mario Kart? So you had sort of Nintendo Racing and you had Mario Kart, where Mario Kart changes so fundamentally that it almost seems wrong to use the phrase or the words Mario Kart with the franchise.
Okay.
I think this is the crossroads Nintendo are coming to. So right. I either think that Nintendo will go wholeheartedly full hog into merging Wave, and I'm including Wave Race now because I think that could be exciting. Wave Race, F-Zero, and Mario Kart, these ideas into one game. They might still call it Mario Kart, or you keep Mario Kart separate and call this other game Nintendo Racing. That is faster. It's faster and more hardcore like F-Zero. It can include water elements like Wave Race, and water elements and flying elements even, a bit like Diddy Kong Racing. And it has the smashification where you're getting these tracks from numerous Nintendo games, just like the stages in Smash Brothers and all the characters. And I'm confident that a Nintendo racing game, whether they do call it Nintendo Racing or something akin to that, or they keep the Mario Kart name and bunch it all together, I think we're going to find out about it this year, and probably around E3 time, and it's going to come out in that big slot of multiplayer online games.
May
2018.
Okay. That's a bold one. That's it's a really interesting one.
And it brings,
sure.
You know, it brings F-Zero and it brings Wave Race in back from the cold. What are you thinking?
Yeah, the thing that I worry about is, and to some extent, this is no problem if you think about some other genres. Nintendo have loads of platformers. They don't really interfere with one another. You can have Kirby, Mario, and Donkey Kong. They're all great, but they do things slightly differently. Racing is weird because they have these multiple racing franchises, but they are very distinct from one another. So I do think that they could do what you're saying and have another racing franchise, but I think they would really have to distinguish it from Mario Kart in order for it to be a viable option. Because otherwise you have these two products that look very similar, that are very similar in tone. And then you also have the issue of, well, if you're doing a Nintendo racing game and it doesn't have Mario in it, then that becomes weird. Because then you have the problem of Mario's on the front of Mario Kart. If Mario's on the front of the Nintendo racing game as well, then people maybe get a bit confused.
It always becomes a problem with Mario Kart, do you stick or twist?
Right.
It's really successful as it is, but are they scared of just constantly putting out things that's too similar and then not smashifying it enough? And,
yeah.
And they are still, they must be conscious of the idea that Wave Race and F-Zero haven't had games at all. But you're right, how could you have a Nintendo racer that didn't have Mario in it?
Exactly.
It's difficult.
It is. I like the idea. I think it's definitely... It gives you a solution for what the fuck do we do with these two games and IPs that don't sell well at all.
And 200cc's in Mario Kart, Mute City, we were just playing this yesterday, and we said, like, these were amazing solutions to bring F-Zero back in from the cold.
Yeah.
And we just need a whole game that does that and more. And my idea is almost like an extension of that in some regards.
Yeah. Is there an ice track in F-Zero?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. I'm just wondering, why? You keep saying it's out in the cold, so I'm wondering.
Out in the cold. Why?
Oh, boy. Yeah, bold. Bold for sure.
But, yeah, big multiplayer game coming to Switch.
I like it. Nintendo getting more into the multiplayer stuff. It's a fun one. Okay, time for my final prediction.
Is it to do with horses and names?
It's not to do with any horses. No, there are no horses involved. No horses were harmed in the making of this podcast. Again, I'm going to be a little bit bold, to be a bit out there. So, in memory of Nintendo president Satoru Iwata, Masahiro Sakurai went to work on a brand new video game based on an old Nintendo franchise. And he's done this before. Took Kid Icarus from the ashes, rose like a phoenix, for Uprising. Finished up Smash Brothers. Seems like maybe he's doing stuff for Switch, but he's probably working on a new project by this point in time. And in the same vein as he took Kid Icarus, brought it back into the modern era, I think that he's working on a balloon fight game. Sakurai is going to reinvent this franchise, bring it into the modern era. It's going to be a third-person action platformer.
Oh, boy.
And is going to be revealed at E3. And I think he will have chosen this as a result of the passing of his mentor and friend, Satoru Iwata, as mark of respect and honor, while also taking a Nintendo franchise that has been sitting around for ages and doing something new with it.
I love this idea. I think, I love the idea that it is respect to Iwata, and I love the idea that it's similar to Kid Icarus, because no one saw that coming.
No.
That was weird. I think you could even apply a formula like this to something like Ice Climbers, although I do love your idea of it being balloon fight and being third person.
Right.
And being obviously 3D.
I think there's interesting stuff you could do with that franchise. Like, the thing with that game is a lot of it is defeating enemies is jumping on top of them, popping balloons. But you also would like to limit it. You don't want to be able to fucking fly forever. So, like, making it a kind of linear action game that also has platforming elements, I think would make sense. You'd have to kind of maybe throw in something there for combat purposes. I'm not sure what that would be. But I think that there's one way you take this. I'm not sure if there, like, it's really difficult to try and reframe the gameplay of the original balloon fight into a modern era. So that's why I think you pull a Kid Icarus and you kind of have to gut it completely and just take it from a new perspective. So, yeah, it's out there as well.
Nice.
It's out there, but I think that would be a really cool thing that no one would expect and would come out of nowhere and shake things up.
Regardless of whether it's true or not, I do think, sorry, that your prediction is true or not.
Right.
I think that there's some really unexpected stuff coming.
Yeah.
That is might even come quite soon in terms
I hope
of actually
so.
Game releases. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Well,
exciting times.
That wraps up our predictions, Bally, for 2017. We did, however, receive an email about mm-hmm. some other predictions. So would you go ahead and read the email?
So our email is from Cerberus, who's from the internet, and he's got a number of predictions. We can maybe go through them one at a time, have
okay.
a quick chat, and then move on to
little
the next
bit of a comment.
So he says, here are some predictions for 2017. I guess they're kind of in order of how likely I think they are to
very
occur.
Very nice.
So number one, excluding Virtual Console but including Wii U releases, Nintendo will release no less than 5 games with Super in the title for Switch.
So, Super Mario Maker, going to be in there.
Right.
Super, is there another Wii U re-release that has Super in the name? He said including Wii U re-releases.
Mm.
So I think Mario Maker is the only one, right? Super Mario Maker.
Yeah, Zelda Blade, I'm a bit confused Splatoon. By this, to be honest.
What do you mean you're confused by it? He says excluding Virtual Console, but right. including Wii U re-releases, they will release no less than 5 games with Super in their title.
Right, but there aren't any other games with Super in their title.
I mean, Super Smash Brothers, Super right. Mario World, Super Contra, Super...
Right.
You know, Super was a title that was used a lot in the Super Nintendo era, obviously. Super Metroid.
Is he suggesting that this Super lineup are all remakes?
No, he's just saying that any game, because they could come out with a new Switch game which has Super in the title. It could be Super Metroid 2, you know? Like, they could
okay,
do that,
okay.
for example. But he's saying there's no less than 5. So he's saying at least 5 games on Switch will have the title Super.
By the end of its life cycle, probably, I guess, yeah.
I guess, yeah. So this is a bit amorphous. He hasn't really given an end date for that one. Mm. So maybe we'll come back to that in 2025. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll get to it in 2025. Yeah, sure. Let me take a note
Yeah, take a note down, Valley. Yeah. No, but in all seriousness, I think you have 2 lock-ins, which is Mario Maker and Smash Brothers. So 3 more. I imagine it's possible.
It's possible. I'm with you now.
Without the Virtual Console, though, that cuts off a lot of possibilities. So interesting.
Number 2, Nintendo will release 3 mobile games along with the Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing. They will release a local co-op Zelda game in the style of Four Swords Triforce Heroes, but obviously with touch controls like the DS games. So,
okay. Similar in some
similar
ways.
Similar to what I was saying, and perhaps a co-op Zelda could work well on mobile. I quite like that
idea.
The
problem I have with a co-op Zelda on mobile is people playing mobile games aren't going to... Like, this isn't Japan. I mean, maybe in Japan it would work, but people aren't going to join together
themselves.
In groups and start co-op Zeldering. And playing online games on mobile is much more a case of an asynchronous thing or something that doesn't require you to talk to the other person. Like, it's either competitive or cooperative. Not cooperative, but usually competitive. So there's no kind of dialogue going back and forth, because that's really annoying if you're on a train and you want to do that sort of stuff. So... I like the idea, I just don't think it's practical for the mobile system. But I do think the idea of touch controls similar to Phantom Hourglass is viable.
I think that's very likely if there's something Zelda-related.
Especially seeing as they had that system built from the ground up years ago, they could just repurpose it. And there is potential that they just use that same art style. Like, they just take the Phantom Hourglass Link and throw that into the mobile game.
I don't like that art style.
What?
I don't like that art style.
Well, they would up the resolution. It's Wind Waker. That's a Wind Waker art style.
It's not.
It's the Wind Waker art style. It doesn't have the same resolution as Wind Waker. It's not the same perspective, but it is the same art style. You can't deny it's the same art style.
Of course, but it's to do with camera angles as well and stuff like that.
It is.
It's very...
But imagine you take that game and you put it on an iPhone, which is way higher resolution than a DS. Mm-hmm. Look at Super Mario Run. He looks so crisp. Like, I've seen that Mario millions of times. It's the best he's ever looked.
Mm.
So I think that that's very, very viable.
Number 3, Nintendo will release a free mobile app that turns your phone into a controller you can use with the Switch. Mario Party 11 will be announced. Up to 8 people can play on one Switch with one copy of the game using phones and the free app as the controllers.
That's a really good call.
I'll tell you
why that is a great call. There's this thing called the Jackbox Party Pack, Bally, which is multiplayer game where you play things like Quiplash and Drawful and all these games where you have all these people in one room on a PlayStation, but they're all controlling it using their phones. They're all like drawing silly pictures like Pictionary or whatever. And it all goes up on the TV screen. It's all connected very easily. You just go to a website and it works. And there is definitely a possibility with the size of a phone compared to the size of a Joy-Con that you could put some virtual buttons on that. Obviously, we fucking hate that shit and it's terrible, but why not give them the option? Why not offer it as a potential thing that, hey, you bring the Switch around and you want to have multiple players, but you don't have enough Joy-Cons? It would work.
I mean, I think...
I'm not sure Nintendo would do it, but it would work.
I think it would work. I think it's a cool idea. I don't think Nintendo would do it for the simple reason... And this was clear throughout the Wii and the Wii U life cycle, is that they just love selling controllers. They make such a great markup on the controllers. Like, there's a brand new Wiimote back in the day was like £40 for a Wiimote. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
So I think I think Joy-Cons will be expensive. And we were talking about customizable Joy-Cons earlier, and I think that stuff will be expensive, and Nintendo will want to make sure you're buying them. And I think ways, even if it's a game like Mario Party, which isn't maybe, you know, top tier Nintendo, I think ways that get you around buying their Joy-Cons, or even like linking up to a potential 3DS or something, I think that's more likely, just because I think Nintendo want to keep it in their ecosystem and keep it
sure.
Keep it keep the money with them, perhaps. But
I like the idea. We'll see. I agree that Nintendo are unlikely to do it themselves. But again, I mentioned that Jackbox thing because it shows people that you can utilize phones and consoles together, and there are ways of doing that these days. And there are, you know, examples like that of it working and being done well. And obviously, virtual controllers, virtual buttons are nowhere near the perfect solution, and obviously, you know, the Jackbox Party Pack doesn't include those, because it's just you drawing on a screen. But I wanted to mention it as a thing because people should know about it.
Number four. As part of their diversification strategy, Nintendo will release a line of Lego sets for Christmas 2017, including a huge Luigi's Mansion set that costs the same as the Switch.
Well, Lego costs fucking loads, Bally, so I wouldn't be surprised if it costs more than the Switch, to be honest. Like, have you seen the Lego Death Star? That thing is like fucking £1,000. It is.
Yeah, Lego's gone up in price since we were younger.
And it was always expensive.
That's what I'm saying. It was already expensive, but it's gone up since then.
It's even climbed even steeper. How have Nintendo never done
this? I was
this?
Literally just about to say, like, how everyone else has done Lego deals.
Right.
I guess Nintendo are terrified of the link that Lego have now massively in video games.
Sure.
That can be the only reason I can think
but
of.
But why not go to TT Games and be like, make us a fucking Nintendo Lego game? Why not make an exclusive Lego game with their characters?
Because
this point, Bally, they're in a place where they are talking about diversifying and going to do theme parks and putting their franchises in potential movies and TV
definitely.
Shows. I don't see why video games are any less of a risk than that.
I think stuff like theme parks have a very distinct... they're not embedded with video games in the same way, perhaps. And I do think it will be to do with Lego's video game future, especially stuff like Dimensions, where there are Lego characters being made of so many franchises that Nintendo are like, oh, we don't want to be associated with all of these things, we want to be our own distinct thing. And it's backwards thinking, don't get me wrong, I'm just putting myself in the backwards thinking head of Nintendo officials.
The other point I wanted to bring up regarding Lego Dimensions is that is on rival platforms. So Nintendo having their characters in Lego Dimensions on a PlayStation is not what they would want.
Or even being associated with that, right? Like, it's just that Lego, I think, offers... They've got their fingers in a lot of pies, and I don't think Nintendo's comfortable with all those pies.
I think Nintendo want to put their own fingers in those pies.
Nintendo want to be making their own pies, you know? They don't want to be dealing with Lego's pies. So I think there's a lot of issues, but I think Nintendo Lego sets would be unbelievably successful. It's Nintendo. They're some of the strongest characters out there. So
absolutely.
I don't think it's going to happen this year, but in the next few years, who knows?
Yeah. Potential for success there.
The final point and prediction is the rumored Pokemon Star will mark the return of the Pokewalker as a Joy-Con. And then Cerberus finishes by saying, despite these somewhat wacky predictions for 2017 promises to be a great year for Nintendo fans, with the Switch coming in March and episode 100 of TNL around September, there is a lot to look forward to. Your buddy, Cerberus.
Well, he's thinking way ahead of us, isn't he?
Yeah, episode 100, it's looming.
Boy. Let's address his final point. I don't think there'd be any way for the Pokewalker to do anything. The Joy-Con, I'm not sure how much technology there is in it, but if it is rumored to have IR and motion and gyro, and it attaches...
It can definitely have a pedometer in it, right?
It could have a pedometer,
but who wants, like, just an individual thing with an analog stick in their
exactly,
pocket?
Yeah, and I don't know how that would track stuff. It would be able to get data back. It's a cool idea.
If there's one way to wear out an analog stick spring, it's to have it cocked at an angle in your pocket all day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then to expect to be able to slide it back on and play, I don't know.
Very true. Well, thank you, Acerbus, for your email. Thank you all for listening to the show this week, and hopefully you'll continue to do so in 2017. We'll need some more emails, though. which will be good. Where can people send those emails to, Bally?
You can send your emails to thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. So much happening this year. We want your thoughts, your criticisms, your ideas.
The Switch event is coming up, so please send us your questions about Switch, all your thoughts and all your desires and your disappointments.
What are we going to do for that Switch event, MBZ?
Well, Bally, I'm glad you asked, because we here at This Nintendo Life have plans. So
it involves
Switch event,
Red Bull.
Yes, for you. I think I can get through it without. But apparently Nintendo hate Europeans and, UK
especially
people.
Brits.
Especially Brits.
And the Portuguese.
Portuguese, yes. They're on our same time zone, aren't they?
Yes. And the Irish.
So Nintendo Switch event is happening in Japan in the morning of the 13th. It's happening in North America in the evening of the 12th. That means that we are square fucking in the middle at 4 and 5 a.m. respectively.
You see, the advantage is that we're not at work or anything during the day on Friday.
Okay.
Because we're just going to watch this thing in the middle of the night.
Exactly. Wake up and then go and have a full day. I hope you'll enjoy that Friday, Bally. It's going to be a hell of one.
Yeah.
So the plan is that I'm probably going to live stream reactions of the Switch event. I'm not sure if Bally will be on the call with me. We'll figure that out and see how things go. But we'll be giving reactions live to the Switch event. That'll go up on YouTube channel, probably my YouTube channel as opposed to the TNL one. So I'll let people know about that. But we are also going to be recording straight after we have watched that event our immediate thoughts, our immediate reactions to what happened. That will then result in me editing that podcast as quickly as possible and getting it up for everyone to listen to.
On both the YouTube channel for This Nintendo Life,
yes,
and the podcast feed.
Exactly. So both places you'll be able to find the podcast. And I think I'm free on Friday. I don't think I have anything in my timetable, so I might just, as soon as we're done recording, edit
it's
that
It's everyone's
thing.
Lucky Friday the 13th, MBZ.
Bally, I was born on Friday the 13th. So
you were born to edit and upload podcasts on
yes.
your lucky day.
Exactly. It's my lucky day. So I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to do my best to get that up as soon as possible. And then we will probably do some more stuff later on. I think probably the episode after this is going to be a very Switch-focused one as well. There'll probably be much more
info. I
don't
think there's going to be a non-Switch-focused episode from
now
on.
No, I know. But I mean, like, we're probably going to be wanting you to send us questions about Switch and all that
yes.
stuff. So do get on that and start sending us your thoughts and opinions to the email address we said before. But yeah, that's the plan going forward. It should be simple and hopefully everything goes well.
But with the Switch, MBZ, it also means the death of another console.
It does.
And that is, of course, the Nintendo Wii U,
yeah.
which is fading away into the distance. It's becoming,
it's a ship in the night.
Given the hard shoulder, the cold shoulder.
So with that, we are doing a new video series on the This Nintendo Life YouTube channel. It's called RIP Wii U. Bally and I look through a bunch of Wii U games, and we're going to be doing that weekly up till the Switch of the launch of the Switch, should I say?
The Switch of the Switch.
The Switch of the Switch. And you can find those over on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ThisNintendoLife. I recommend you subscribe there. Those are some fun videos we recorded. We did all those in person together, mm-hmm. like we're recording this podcast. That was great going through some old Wii U games.
Especially look out for the Mario Maker one.
Oh, yeah, look out for that Mario Maker one. That's a fun time. Sure.
And no, they're going to come out, we thought it'd be fun if they came out in the same order that the games came out in real life.
Yes, yeah, so we're going chronologically.
Right back to the start. I guess number one will be Nintendo Land.
Yes, and Nintendo Land will be the first video going up, hopefully soon, if not by the time this is out. So keep an eye out on the YouTube channel for that and, go and subscribe because we've got some fun stuff happening in the new year. So aside from that, you can find us in various places. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we will maybe be on Google Play Store if 2017 is the year in which Google get their fucking shit together and work in our country. Bally, you can be found in various places on the internet. Where can people find you?
Please find me on Twitter. I'm at Ballyman91. That's BALLYMAN91. That is also my name on the Miiverse.
How long more will we be saying that's my name on the Miiverse? Will Miiverse stay alive in
we'll
the Switch?
We might find out on Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know if they'll keep the Miiverse brand. We'll see. I don't think they will. But yeah, find me on those places. Be good if you followed. Follow the podcast account on Twitter. It's at TNL Podcast. All this great stuff we've been talking about, it all goes through the Twitter account. It's the best place to go to find all of that good stuff. So follow at TNL Podcast. MBZ, where are you?
You can find me at Lord NBZ on the Twitters and on the Miiverse. That is a great place to go, and it is a fun time to be had. You can review us on iTunes. That's always helpful. We got some reviews all the time from people who like us. So be a people who likes us. Review us on iTunes. And I think, Bally, that is going to close us out. Is there anything that we have forgotten, that I've forgotten, that you want to pick up on before we close out this predictions episode?
I'd like to play more games like Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, well, in 2017.
Bally, if you listen to me, I'll tell you all of them and you can go and do them.
I'm ready. I am ready.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad for that, and I'm looking forward to whatever Nintendo does in 2017. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be fun, and I hope you'll all join us for the ride. So thank you all for listening. We'll see you in a few days. Until then, goodbye, everyone. The musical interlude used on today's show was a cover of Underground Reservoir from Castlevania Aria of Sorrow.